Hi, welcome to Hometown to Hollywood. Thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Jessica Marie Garcia. Jessica is an actress best known for her recurring roles on Livin' Maddie and The Middle.
Jessica, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super stoked to be here.
I am so stoked that you're here. So, I want to know, first of all, when did you know that you wanted to be an actor?
It was, I mean, when I was very, very young. I don't believe there was anything else I ever really wanted to be in life. I remember watching Funny Girl when I was super young. I think I was like 8. And I was just like, I saw Barbara Streisand and she was so funny and so different and had a voice that was unbelievable. I don't have that part, but her acting was just unreal and she had so much power. And I was like, I want to do this. How do I do this? And as soon as I told my mom, she just gave me so many movies to watch. And I just grew up watching like Elizabeth Taylor and Betty Davis and just aspiring to be them. And there was nothing else I wanted to do. I wanted to be them. I wanted to hold everyone's attention like they did.
So part of your mom's response was to give you a bunch of quality movies to watch.
Oh, yeah. She was very much, if you're going to do this, I want you to be the best. And she loved movies. My mom is a dancer, but not anymore. But she's not, she doesn't dance now other than our living room. But she loved film and wanted me to, if I wanted to pursue that, then watch the best of it.
That's so cool. So you were around 8.
Yeah.
When you fell in love.
Yeah. I mean, I was acting. I'm only a child. Being an only child, I feel like you put on shows on your own for your stuffed animals and things. So I was always performing, I would say. So it was, I think it was instilled in me at birth.
Did she sign you up for acting classes? Or?
No, funny enough, that's what's so interesting about my mom. Like, she was so hands-on at that moment. Like, you need to watch this, you need to do this. But she never, like, said for me to do anything. I kind of took my own lead, and she just always supported me. She was always the one that I ran to and was like, oh, I'm doing this. But she never, like, was the one signing me up for anything. So I tried out for my first play. It was A Midsummer Night's Dream. I was in 6th grade. That was my first audition experience. It was in a classroom, and I had the paper, like, in front of my face. It was horrible, and I just screamed everything because I was so nervous. But I was a fairy. I was a fairy in one of them. And, Mustard Seed, that was my name. I had 2 lines. It was great. I think there were 1 word. And then from there, I ended up being Phoebe and As You Like It, and it grew from there. But she was always my supporter, but she never, like, had me do anything.
That's so cool, though. Yeah. But she's still, like, the support is huge.
Oh, yeah. No, the support is ridiculous. She blindly moved out here for me. But she never, like, knew. Like, I remember telling my mom, I got a callback. And she's like, oh, that's great. And I was like, Mom, I'm going to network callbacks. Didn't you just do that? And you're like,
that's different, Mom.
No, it's, like, really different. And this is a much bigger deal. So she just, like, gets really excited. But she has no idea how the business works.
That's
none
so
whatsoever.
Cute.
Yeah. I love it that way, actually.
So you were leading the show. Was there someone in particular that inspired you? Like, did you have somebody in particular that you felt was, like, your idol, if you will, or your particular acting role model?
Definitely Elizabeth Taylor, for one. It was Elizabeth Taylor for just the fact that she got on screen and no one else was in a scene. I saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and knew that that's what I wanted to do every single day of my life, to just feel that, whatever it is, to feel that much and to be able to tell that story. And she was so much younger and they made her look so much older, and she enveloped that character, and I wanted to do that. Her and Betty Davis and Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, like, stole my heart. Like, I wanted to do that. So it's so funny that I do so much comedy now, because I relate to so many dramas, but they go hand in hand. And yeah, I would say Elizabeth Taylor for sure.
You will have your turn. I have a feeling that the
thank you.
The opportunities will come.
You're
going
to see me cry so many times.
But, you know, it's so cool to hear you say that, because we actually did the same thing with Dove, and her dad was a big movie buff. And I really, like, those movies that you're quoting, those are movies from, you know, what, the 40s, the 50s,
yeah,
the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they are some of the best things on film. And I really feel really strongly that if somebody's passionate about acting, that's part of their school, is
absolutely,
to study the great, the best movies that have been done, because they can learn so much by watching them.
Oh, especially because, you know, you had nothing but that camera and that actor and those lines, and that's it. You know, there wasn't any really bells and whistles to cover up a good scene. You were the scene.
Yeah.
And that's so amazing. And I always say that's the difference between theater and film, is that theater is an actor's medium and film is a director's medium, because you can have someone in a scene on a film and just zoom into their eye as a director and that be your statement. But in theater, like, it is you. And that's what's so crazy, is back then, like, I felt like they held hands more, mm-hmm. theater and film, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Yeah. There's a lot more bells and whistles to distract. Yeah. From the acting or cover up mediocre acting.
Yeah, I don't feel like necessarily in a lot of movies right now, acting is the primary focus in a lot of films. But I was in high school and they wanted me to go to California. I'm from Orlando, Florida originally. So they wanted me to come to California for pilot season and participate in this contest called Best New Talent. And in that, it's a talent competition for children, like so many ages, to do like audition for agents and go in front of commercial agents and theatrical agents and, you know, just do, you had different categories to compete in. And I did that. And one of the agents that called me back was the one that I signed with. And okay. That's kind of how that worked out.
So you start by doing like sixth grade in school Shakespeare. Yeah. By the time you're in high school, you're in a performing arts magnet.
Yes.
And then because of your friends, you end up in a showcase. It sounds like a commercial showcase.
Yeah, it's like, it was weird. You know, you had, this goes back to, I had a very strange manager at the time and she wrote all of our material. So she wrote us commercials and she wrote us monologues. And we would do, we had a commercial competition, so we would do commercials in front of a few commercial agents, and we would do one commercial, and then they would, like, rate you and see if they'd want to call you back. So it was that kind of thing. It was, like, okay. A cattle call for, like, all different categories of things. But, yeah, I think that everyone has a different journey, but that I think finding that manager is kind of what helped me.
So you're still in high school, yeah. But now you've got representation in mm-hmm. Los Angeles.
Yes.
So then what happens?
They begged me to come out and do pilot season. And I think I was like 16 and I didn't. I left high school when I was 18 and I drove out here the middle of my senior year and drove out here to California.
You couldn't wait the extra couple of months?
You know what was so bad? Honestly, it wasn't about that. At the time, there was like 5 crazy hurricanes that happened in Orlando. And, you know, I had like my ceiling in my living room. And yeah. And to make a long story short, there was a lot of problems and we lost a lot of money. So mm-hmm. I dropped out of school to get a job. Mm-hmm. And when I got enough money to kind of move out here, I just kind of did that.
This is real life.
It's real life.
This
yeah.
is good things. This is good for people to hear, yeah. you know, especially any kids who are listening to this, because it's not always easy.
No, it wasn't easy. The first year I moved out here was by far the hardest year of my life. I was by myself. I was living with some people that I shared management with, who ended up becoming my family mm-hmm. because of the things we went through together. But yeah, it was the hardest year of my life. I was hosting, had no money. It was the point where it was like, okay, I had $5 I could eat, or I could drive to work I had to get gas to drive to work. And it was like, you had to pick gas. And it was a hard, at 19, that was really, really hard.
So you're living with your manager?
When I first got here, I was living with some girls that shared the same manager and okay. that friend that got me that manager.
Okay.
And she went insane, my friend, and left me for a guy. Uh-huh. And because of that, her father signed the lease. So we were out of an apartment. Mm-hmm. And I was 3,000 miles away from my mom, who was just everything. I had nothing else, raised by a single parent. And we had no choice but to move in with my manager, because we had the same manager. And we lived like 3 little pigs in a living room, 3 single like twin beds in a living room in Reseda with like 10 other kids. And it was horrible.
This sounds like a scene out of Annie.
We were singing other show tunes besides Annie, but no, yeah, it sucked. It really, really sucked. And, yeah, I got out of there just in time, but my manager was insane. She was charging us a lot of money to live there on top of her managing services, on top of her actual teachings.
Is this legal?
No, it's not legal. It's not legal. It's not legal. Right after I left her in a very horrible, ugly way, she got I'll tell you actually how it happened. This one of the little girls was cleaning the floor and her parents called her and was like, what are you doing? And she goes, oh, I'm cleaning the floor. And she's like, why are you cleaning the floor? And she goes, because if I clean the floor, I get driven to Ralph's to go get food. This is an 8-year-old that is like an 8 to 10-year-old that is saying this.
Oh my God.
If it wasn't for us living at the house, the kids wouldn't have been able to drive to the grocery store to get food or to do anything. It was like, I mean, it wasn't like we were dying.
No,
we
were getting beat, but it was bad. That sounds like Miss Hannigan. That sounds just
hideous. Yeah. No, I always say she's the personification of Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
Nice.
She was like that. And when I left her shortly after, she did get arrested, and she will not manage anyone's children anymore.
Well, that's good news.
My biggest note to that is you should be very hands-on if your kids are being flown out for pilot season blindly 3,000 miles away. I think that managers have a way of being, not all managers by any means, but like those managers that are doing that for that reason, they have a great way of saying that your kid is like the next big thing. Even though she was a great judge of talent, there are many of my friends who were rep by her are still here and work all the time. But, yeah, it was bad.
Great judge of talent, terrible human being.
Exactly. She was a terrible human being. You should never have to pay your manager anything other than when you start making money.
Thank you. Like, I say this every opportunity I
unless
get.
It's like the only time you should ever put money in right away is for pictures. Mm-hmm. That's it. And even then, she charged $1,000. And that was her. That was not all going to the photographer.
That's like so many shades of illegal. You don't pay your manager for photos.
No, you don't. You pay the photographer. And my mom just blindly, like, just supported me. Mm-hmm. And, it was horrible because as a single mom, like, she worked 24 hours a day to get pay for those headshots and to get me to go to California. We had just taken a Northeast tour through colleges because we visited Juilliard and everything, so she paid for that too. Like, it was tough.
This is so classic, though. I mean, your situation is so, sadly, it's so normal.
Yeah.
You've got a supportive, great parent who doesn't know anything about the business, because nobody does, unless they're in it. And this, you know, passionate, talented kid who, because they're a kid, doesn't know anything about the business. And you guys, it's a very vulnerable position to be mm-hmm. in. Well, I'm glad it turned out okay.
Yeah. Oh,
and you got out of there. So then you get out of there, and then what, are you taking acting classes? Or
yeah, you know, luckily I had a friend named Nathan, who I was friends with in Orlando, who came out here and started assisting John Kirby, who is an acting coach out here. And he introduced me to him. He was like, you need to take classes with him. And he is the one who literally guided me so much further, because I was lost when I met him. So lost. I had done a movie that I was super psyched, and I got a movie and I thought that was going to change everything. And it was like a really horrible movie. I was getting like $20 a day and I didn't even get my last check. Our like makeup artist went on strike. It was horrible. And so that happened. And after that, I was like, yeah, I need some guidance. And he really helped me. And still helps me. I'm still with him to this day.
So you would go on the record as saying that training is very important.
You know, I will say for me, I know there's a lot of people that have never had an acting class and have never had a problem, you know, but for me, it was much more than learning. It wasn't as much as learning how to act. I feel like I know how to, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's being able to be vulnerable enough to become a different human and to become, and find out other people's human traits and not judge other people's human traits, because then you can't obtain, like, it's such a different thing. But for me, the thing he taught me how to do was, once I was able to break that wall down and be an actor who was fearless and be able to do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Like, I did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for a long time, and I was coming home at night for like a month being like, why am I so depressed? Like, I'm in such a dark place. And I was like, of course, because I'm losing a made up child. I'm losing my son every night on stage. Like, of course I'm going to feel this way. So he really helped me how to learn where to put that, more so than to become an actor. It was mm-hmm. really how to still have Jessica when you're, you know, becoming all these different people, because it made sense why people like take pills and do things to try and mellow themselves out, because you're literally, I was losing a son. And then I did a scene where I had just lost my husband. Like, you know, you bring out these dark things and you need to be able to shut that off.
Mm-hmm. close the door.
Yeah.
Put it away. No, it's so important. And a lot of actors are really confused by that. And it absolutely affects them. You know, it can be scarring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Actually. So that makes me really happy. Well, so when you came out here, you had representation. You got that through
I was so
showcase.
Lucky. Yeah. I got that through that horrible manager. You know, she got me an agent. And when I left her, I thought my agent would leave me, but we just got another manager who was better. Not much better, but legally better.
Mm-hmm.
She was
technically
better. She wasn't doing anything illegally, but she wasn't. What I then fell into was being the best. I'm sorry to be this blunt, but to be the best actor in a group of children actors. I was still older. I'm someone who's older who plays younger. So as far as training went, I was so far past them, and she would have me do showcase after showcase. And the people I was meeting was like, I don't understand why you're here. And that turned into like, I'm just throwing my money away because I'm not going out on auditions. I'm just having a bunch of people tell me I'm good. And that does nothing for me. You know, so then I needed to find. And then when I left her, she was like, oh, I just didn't think you were serious about this. And I was like, how could you possibly think that? I'm training and training and training, getting ready for the day that I'm auditioning for something. And but I'm not getting those auditions. So that was another thing. And then I just got another. I luckily had a friend who I lived with who was with that horrible manager. She worked as a commercial agent and she got me a meeting with Pam. And then I met Pam Fisher, which then completely changed my life. And that's where we go. It's all who you know, and it's all being in that right room at the right time.
Well, when you're ready, too.
And I mean, I was ready. Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of ways to hold that whole, you know, it's who you know thing. And a lot of people are really bitter about that because it's like, well, if you don't know anybody, you're shut out. Well,
no, because if you use that as an excuse, then you're not writing your own content. You're not getting out there because you will meet them if you do that. So that's just a lazy person's way of being upset about something like that, because you have to be in the right rooms.
Yeah, you have to, but you can get yourself.
You have to
in
get
those
yourself.
Rooms.
I got myself in the right rooms. You know what I mean?
You got yourself there.
Yeah.
And then when you got in that room, you were ready, and that's the second piece of that. It's like,
absolutely.
Okay, go ahead. You know, it's who you know, but then that won't take you anywhere if you don't have, mm-hmm. you know, what it takes to go somewhere with that. Mm-hmm. So you did at that point, and then some. That's exciting. Well, then, of course, you know, now you've got Pam.
Oh, God bless. That just changed everything. Like, I had no idea what an agent was supposed to be or how they were just like, so, like how it was supposed to be in this business. Like, I learned so much of the business through her because she educated me. She wasn't just blindly submitting me. She got to know who I was and what I wanted and where I wanted my career to go. And she, you know, had kind of showed me that path, then told me this is okay. Well, this is how you get there. Like, this is what people think. And this is, you know, and that's so you need an agent who works for you. You can have a great agent, but I've had friends who are great actors who have had agents who scream at them and yell at them and are not available. And I wouldn't want an agent that way. But some people do. Some people just want to know where they have to go and don't want to get to know them. But I love the fact that I can call my manager or agent and just be like, you know, I had a really bad audition and I just need to talk about it. And they'll sit there with me and talk to me about it. I need that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some people don't. So you have to find somebody who works for you.
Well, and I think back to your previous point about being, you know, far and away sort of the best of the people that your previous agent had. That's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to be the top client, the most successful, talented, whatever, client of your agent or manager. And just as much, it's mm-hmm. not the best thing, obviously, to be the bottom one.
Right.
Because if you're either at the top or at the bottom, if you're at the top, you probably ought to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And if you're at the bottom, you probably aren't getting the attention you need. So you want to find an agent or a manager where there's a fit that makes sense,
yeah.
where who you are makes sense with the other people that they're representing and that they're sending out.
Mm-hmm. Or at least care about you enough to really pitch you. I have friends who've had great agents, but again, like you said, they were low on the totem pole. So the agents didn't know how to pitch them. Like,
yeah.
And that's horrible. When, you know, it's like, oh, you could have gone on the audition. Well, you could have gone on the audition. You don't have a long resume. Well, did you pitch me? And it's like, Well, how would you pitch me? Like, tell me, how would you pitch me? And if they don't know how to do that, then they probably don't believe in you. And you need someone who believes in you.
More than anything.
Yeah.
I think. Let's talk about auditioning advice, because we're just talking about auditions. What Do you have any auditioning advice for you know, young actors or new actors or actors who are like learning how to audition? Like, what are some hot tips you may have?
Be on time. That's a huge thing. If you're in LA, leave at least an hour, especially if you don't know where you're going. You're not going to find parking. Expect to not find parking. If you can Uber, great. Because honestly, there are so many things that happen on that day of your audition. You know, your tire, you break it, like your tire, you got a hole in your tire, you can't find, your outfit's got a hole on it, and it's the perfect outfit to go on the audition. Your printer ran out of ink. Everything that's going to happen is going to happen. And you have to know that ahead of time. I have, again, a lot of friends, God bless them, who are actors and they have not understood this. And they go into a room and they are frantic. They are sweating. They haven't thought about the words because they're too busy on the fact that, like, oh, I'm going to get a parking ticket. I, like, had this happen. Like, you have to expect it. So be prepared. Be prepared that these things are going to happen. Have your headshot printed and ready to go before this. And, like, be prepared is my big thing. Know your words. If at least to me, if you have 3 pages, you should know them. Like, I know some people say you shouldn't know the words. You should, especially for me. If I don't know my audition backwards and forwards, I can't do anything with it. If I'm thinking about the words, I'm not thinking about a character. And that so easily happens as an actor. A sentence could be like, I was going to school, and you don't even think about it. Like, it doesn't even make sense to you. You're like just going, I was going, what is it? I was going, he was going. Like, you're not thinking about it as a real sentence. So it's really knowing the words. So as you go over and you go over it, you're like, oh, wait, I'm having a conversation. Okay. So you have that part. And then not apologizing. That's a huge thing for me because, again, I've been there when it's just like, oh, can you stand here? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, can you slate? Hi. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Like, don't apologize. Don't put the casting director above you. You know, you are on the same level. You're not going in to find a job. You're going in to act, you know? Like, if you're not realizing that this is a moment that you get to do what you love, if you're thinking about it as just a job that you're so desperate to get, that's going to read.
I love that. This is such good advice, Jess.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's just from doing this for 10 years. Like, I'm telling you, like, I've every crazy audition story, I've had it. You know, I've had people not look up. I always say I get this thing and I don't want it to think it's because it's a minority thing, but like, I have people that don't expect me to be good. They just don't. I've had casting directors, before Liv and Maddie. I feel like I've gotten a little bit more respect having that on my resume, but I
hope so.
But like, I'd go into a room and they'd be like, all right, yeah, yeah, stand here, do this. And they'd start. And then all of a sudden I would start and there would be a shuffle. And I call it the casting director shuffle, where it's like, oh, she's actually an actor. I didn't know that. Like, you know, it's such like a weird thing and they treat you differently. Because if you go in there I go in there with confidence, like, I've worked on this. Like, whether or not I'm not right physically is not my problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't go in there thinking, God, there's going to be someone better looking for this, or there's someone who looks better. Because now I'm in this weird place where I'm not stick thin, but I'm not this big girl. So it's like, I just have to be the best me. Like, and if they like it, great. And if they don't, it's not for me. I can't kill myself for that.
Can I just stop right now and say that is brilliant life advice, not just brilliant audition advice?
Oh, just not judging. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, that's all any of us can do ever, yeah, anywhere, is like, just be our best selves and like, 100%. It's either for us or it's not.
100%. I think of it as just another minute to act. You know, I went out for something yesterday that was so unlike me. And I was just excited that they wanted to see me for something that was so unlike me. And I knew that there was probably people more innately born to play that role, but I was going to do the best I could do, you know, and I was fine with that. I was so I went in prepared. I was off book. And like, I'm telling you, if you are off book and care at all, and that shows, that casting person is going to treat you 100% differently. They're going to go, a real actor's in the room. Someone came and is prepared, and they will react. I don't care how curmudgeon you might think they are when you get there. It'll change their perspective 100%.
I believe wholeheartedly in that. You know, that was always our experience. And, mm-hmm, and Dove was always just, you know, committed to showing up with her sides memorized. And it's like, if you don't, it's almost disrespectful. It's like, I didn't care enough about this role and this opportunity to bother memorizing the sides that a bunch of other people managed to do, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, and right away, it's like, it's just
and
a total
And we get hours before an audition.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of time always.
And sometimes you have three. Sometimes you have three in a day that have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
You have like a Nick Jr. audition and then like an HBO like crazy drama and then a commercial for orange juice. Like it's unreal the difference. And like, that's part of your job. And some people don't realize that the business part of this is so much of it.
Thank you for saying that.
It is.
Go into that.
No, but it's true. I think that, and that would be another huge advice point that I would give to actors who want to do this, is that as much as your passion is so much of it, it's business. You know, are you sellable? Is this sellable? Is this current? Is this now? Like, how can I make money out of this? That's all anybody cares about.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know that in a way you are a product. And it's like, and that is how I always go thinking. When I came here, I had to find out who I was 110% and be unapologetic about who that was. Know that this is Jessica and nothing is going to change that. And you're going to like that.
Mm-hmm.
And because they will try and change you. No, you're this girl. No, you're this. Or you would fit really great as this. And no.
I know who I am.
Exactly. And people, again, will respond to that. But you have to have that confidence.
I love that. That just gave me chills. So what has surprised you about this journey that you've been on since you've come here?
In a weird way, it surprised me and doesn't surprise me that I've actually done it. You know what I mean? Like, it's so weird. I've been told for so long. I remember being in high school and being in a magnet program where everybody was actors. I didn't get cast in anything. Nothing. My freshman year, my sophomore year, my junior year, when we started doing seniors were casting things. Then I got into stuff and I did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in front of my director. And at 16, doing the best job. And I was so happy about it. And being able to be like, no, you might not have cast me, but I did this. And having people's entire perception of me change. But still them going, well, I'm going to college because I'm going to Dartmouth and I'm going here and I'm going to NYU and I'm going to be the best actor in New York. And I came out here and nobody believed in me. They're all like, you're going to go straight to LA. Good luck. You know the percentage of you making it. And now I have all these friends that went to college. Not saying you shouldn't go to college by any means, but like they just their attitudes towards it. And then they come here and want to do what I'm doing. And I'm just like, well, like have fun with those school loans. I don't know.
But it takes time. It takes time.
It does.
Time.
And it takes a certain person. You know, Harrison Ford said the only reason he made it is because he stood in line long enough. And I take that so to heart. You know, he was a stand-in before he got...
He was a carpenter too, right?
Yeah. Like Jesus. Harrison Ford is like Jesus. No, but it's true. I just know there is no... Like, even on those days where I question myself so hard, there's a little part of me that is the biggest part of me that says, nah, you got this. Nah, you know you got this. Like, even on those days where I'm like, oh God, I'm not thin enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm never going to be able to do these roles. I'm just like, no, I will. If I have to write it myself, I will. And that's inspiration from the fact that so many females against type are having their voices heard right now.
That's actually my favorite thing, is when there's a surprising casting choice and somebody shows up against type and blows everybody out of the water. It's thrilling.
And it's about time. And that doesn't even go for just saying like, oh, it has to be an awkward type. Even I was reading something about, I think Charlize Theron said something about how beautiful people have to fight for roles too, because they are like, oh, you're too pretty for this role. And I totally understand where people would be that way.
Well, look at her in Monster.
Exactly. I was in Monster.
Shut up. What?
What?
They
shot Monster, Little Tin Fat, and Little Sweat. It was the first movie I ever really did. But I was an extra in the roller skating rink. I'm one of the...
Can I see you if I go back and look at it?
You can pause it. You can see my body.
I'm going to watch this with Dove now.
Yeah,
she loves that movie,
too. It's so funny. Like, I just remember that, yeah.
Oh.
And seeing Patty Jenkins, like, that was just, oh my God. A female director, like, was... blew my mind.
Thrilling, thrilling. Well, speaking of, like typing and all that stuff, I'm going to loop back to school here for
Please.
A minute. So what was your... As a human being, not as an actor... school experience like? Did you fit in? Was it easy? Was it fun? Was it hard? Was it challenging? What was that like for you?
Middle school was tough for me because I was always overweight, and I have psoriasis from the knees down, and I'm just a furry girl. So just, I mean, moustache, unibrow, sideburn, I have it all. Like, if you can have hair there, I have it. And that was really hard. You know what I mean? Because in middle school, like, your parents are going to let you shave your legs. And I was like a woolly mammoth. So I feel like I got my comic chops from middle school. And I have a gap. Oh, God. People would say that, like, they'd kick field goals all the time. So that was really tough for me. Those were the hardest days for me. Just because I didn't want to go. I went to a private school, so we all wore uniforms. And just being able to see girls who fit it better, and I had no choice to wear these things, it was sad. And that's when you start realizing that you're different. So that's when I really started doing comedy, and doing plays was fun because it made me a part of something that I wasn't. I did chorus too. Being busy like that really helped. Mm-hmm. High school, I was a little bit the same, knowing that I could start over. But I think my junior year, I completely changed. There was like a switch that changed in me where I just did not give a crap about what anybody thought. And I felt myself changing, knowing that, I think my mom said it to me. She was like, you know that there's high school is 4 years, and then you never see these people again. And no one wants to be the person that peaks in high school. So when I would go to high school and I wasn't the ones picked in the plays, so I was always in tech. So I did music for Les Mis, and we did the most beautiful Les Mis. I can't even tell you, but I was tech. Mm-hmm. Nobody could care. Mm-hmm. Like I did wardrobe, so I can make things. Like I can do a lot of things. I was a well-rounded actor, but I never got picked. And that I remember being on stage to audition for something, and I didn't say a word. I think we had to do something from Madea, and I just stood there in front of an entire room of seniors, and I just stood there. And that was so, I was like, okay, well, I guess I can't act either, so I guess they're right. And then again, you have that voice inside of you that you're like, no, like, why would you ever put someone else's opinion of your dreams on your dreams? Like, this person doesn't care if you sink or swim. Why put that on them? Mm-hmm. So now it just feels so great that the people that said that about me are literally contacting me, trying to, like, hang out with me or, like, get a meeting with someone I know, or, like, their kids watch me. Like, that's hilarious to me. And it's just about the fact that there's nothing better than, there's no better revenge than success.
It's really true.
And just knowing that, again, like, you have to believe in yourself. You're worth it. Like, that's my biggest message when I was losing the weight, when I was, you know, in struggling this. Like, I am worth it. Like, if somebody says, you know, Jessica, you can't win an Oscar, I would be like, I can and I will, because I'm worth one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think that's what's so hard, is people get scared to believe in themselves that much. And it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
You should be your number one fan. You get to be whoever you want to be. Like, why wouldn't you be everything you love about somebody? You know?
I love that. Because it's your life. Nobody else gets to tell you. Yeah.
Nobody. It's like nobody.
The fabulous children's book, you know, Harold and the Purple Crayon. It's like, pick that baby up and draw what you want to step into.
And like, if you go back and you listen to interviews with, you know, just Steve Jobs, or like any Jennifer Lawrence, anybody that you care about, you read about their struggles. And they were never like these kids that weren't made fun of, or these normal people.
None of them. And nobody that I know has reached, you know, the achievement that they've reached without some struggle. And you don't see the struggle. Let's be honest. People don't put the struggle on Instagram generally. You know, we see the Instagram, we see the exciting bits, but we don't see the private moments of doubt and fear and pain and the struggles that went on when we were, what, in middle school and high school and whatever to get there. And even when you landed, like you landed here, you were 18.
Yeah.
It didn't all fall into place for you.
No. I mean, I was waiting tables the first two seasons of Liv and Maddie. Like, you don't know what's gonna happen to you. And the struggle is real and alive. Like, I was taking pictures with kids while I was handing them their burgers. Like, that just is a reality of life.
That's amazing.
But again, this is what I love to do. This is what I was meant to do, so.
And you're doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. And you have to remind yourself that.
So at this point, you know, you probably have a few things to say about success. You know, what do you think is important and not important about success?
I think you have to feel like you're successful before you hit any dream that you want. Like, I think it goes back to happiness. And if you're not happy now, you're not going to be happy then. You know, I wake up trying to just be so thankful and remind myself how thankful I am. Like, you know, my mom has been cancer-free for 5 years. Like, I'm so thankful for that. And whenever I have a bad day, I just go, well, that would be, like, you know what I mean? Like, I have an incredible fiance, you know, who I met out here, who I would never have met if I didn't make this plunge to come out here. And it's just, I'm so thankful the fact that, you know, Liv and Maddie has gone on for 4 years, that I have, like, an incredible relationship with your daughter, and that I got to see her grow in this experience. Like, there's so many things to be thankful for that it you have to be happy about it now. You know, if you're not happy now, getting whatever success, you're just going to still find some problem with it.
I agree. People have it really turned around a lot of the time. Like, they think, well, after I get this, then I'll be happy. Yeah. But it's like, you know what? You will never get this if you're not happy first. Happiness has to come first. And it's kind of a choice.
Oh, it 100% is a choice. It's so much easier to be happy. And again, like I've told you before, like, it's so easy for me to, I'm a dweller. I take everyone's problems and I put them on my shoulders. Like, I feel like I have to help everybody. So I need to learn that, like, you know what I mean? That's an ongoing process for me.
Yeah.
That I have to just, like, live in the moment and just let things go and know that, like, I don't need to fix everything. And that, again, comes from meditation. And, you know, success is not happiness. Like, you have to make them two different things.
Success is not happiness. Yeah. Success is success. Happiness is happiness. And, you know, if you're lucky, you get both of them.
Yeah.
They're not the same thing.
I mean,
I
think it's like you have to find that balance. That's life. You finding that balance within every minute. But I think it's easier to just find that pleasant happiness, like that just moment of relaxation, and live in that as much as you can. Like, I'll be watching a movie and I'm like, oh, did I do this? And I'm like, what are you doing? I can't tell you how many times I had a dear friend of mine. I came to visit him and he is talking to me and he grabbed the phone out of my hand and put it down and was like, so can we have a conversation? And I was like, yeah, of course. And I just felt horrible. And it's so true. Like, social media, at your job, those emails, like, everything just becomes your job and you forget about the person sitting in front of you. Like, that's another thing, finding that balance. When I went to Couch Candy when Martin Short was there, and he was saying on those off when you're not working, he said, you have to find how to be a whole person. You have to find those other parts of you that matter just as much as your job or the dream that you have. Because if you get this job and all the success, but you're not healthy, you're never going to enjoy that. So,
I can't agree more. That's just huge. Like, get under a tree, like, sit on the grass, you know, go take a walk, be with someone you love.
He totally mind blow when he said those things to us. And he's just so, he just understood that we're all like in that moment of just going, is this okay? Like, are we doing all right? You know, should we keep doing this? It's such a tough thing. You have to have the will to be in this business. It's not easy. It's not for the weak.
Well, and that whole, again, another truism, you know, you shouldn't do this unless you want it more than anything else. It's just, it's just so true because it is hard, you know? Yeah. And if you don't want it more than anything else, you ought to do something else.
You should. It's an illness to want to do this.
Yeah.
It really, really is. I would recommend anybody to find anything else they want to do other than doing this, because it's so tough. And I'm in such a weird generation, being like the last of the millennials, like, or like the first of the millennials, I guess I would say, because, you know, our parents at my age were in a much different place than I am. So you're like, I have so many friends right now who are jumping off acting because they're like, no, I have family.
It didn't happen for
them. It didn't happen. And again, I'm like, no, I'm not going to leave this. I can't.
No, it's your thing, and that's why you're in the right place, and that's why you are following it. I'm glad that you are.
Me too. It's the only thing I'm good at.
Take note, everybody. If it's the only thing you're good at, do it. Otherwise, go do something else.
You should see my paintings.
Well, so... So speaking of, what are your personal methods for staying positive and focused on your dream when things just get really challenging?
Challenging in the business or just life in general, you think?
Either one.
I think staying positive, I think, is just so important that I feel like I just try and remind myself of the positive things, because what happens to me is that I will think of it as something dark or something that's happened to me that day, and I can dwell on it and just go into a pit. I feel like sometimes I can drown in a glass of water, honestly. And I try and give myself those moments. I give myself that hour of freaking out, and then I have to get up, because I remember crying over something that was so dumb. I think I was like 12, and my mom like letting me cry and then being like, all right, well, you got to get up and keep going. Like, I didn't raise a weak woman. You know, she always said that to me. Like, she's one of the strongest people I've ever met in my life, you know, and she's battled so much her entire life that I couldn't be weak in front of her. And I'm not saying crying is weak. You have to cry. You have to get through that. That's not the weakness. It's letting those emotions outdo, like, just overcome your whole life and not allow you to get out of it. I can't let myself get into that pit. You know, the only way out of that is positivity. So you have to just, as soon as you can be positive, find a way to be and get yourself out. If that's meditation, if that's taking a hot shower, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. like whatever it is to help you or be with, like I being with my my dog Lady, like she makes me so happy. She calms me, because you know they feel when you're
animals
upset.
Are amazing that way.
It's just like whatever is that therapy. Writing is another therapeutic thing for me. I love writing like slam poetry. Any kind of like spoken word is something I really like to do. And just remembering that even though this might have been a really bad day, I still have people that love me. I'm still in a place that I know that I'm supposed to. I have a roof over my head. You know, I'm not struggling like there are so many people in this world that are struggling. So it's even if you have to go there to find that positive, you have to. Because there's always somebody doing something, like wanting this so badly. You know, when I get mad that I didn't book a role, I think about the fact that it's a miracle that I've booked ones before this. You know? And I think that's how I try and stay positive.
I love that. So speaking of needing to stay positive, looking for that when that's important, what are some of your challenges that you've been facing or that you faced in this journey, like specifically?
Well, the weight thing has been hard. The weight thing is really hard. Because everyone wants to be a leading lady, you know? Everybody wants to be the number one.
You mean you don't come to Hollywood to be an extra?
What? Who says that? But extras are very important. I'm not
they
saying
are.
That.
They
but,
are.
No, but it's
but
true.
That's
it's
not
true.
Why you come
yeah,
here,
exactly.
Is it?
I love to speak. I love hearing myself speak, as you can tell. So, you know, the weight thing is hard because it's been something that I've struggled with my whole life, but now I'm in a place where I'm comfortable enough with it. It's just whether or not other people are comfortable enough with it to cast me. Mm-hmm. So that's a struggle. Or my age has been a struggle because, you know, I'm now going out for older roles, but sometimes people don't think I look old enough to do them. And that's tough because I want to work, you know? Mm-hmm. Those are struggles that I deal with, and just maybe not being really hot one week where you get 3-4 auditions, and then there's weeks when you have nothing and you're just like, oh, God. Okay. Like what, but then you have to think about what other things that you can be doing with your time. Mm-hmm. And I've been really blessed to be doing, you know, things with Awesomeness TV, which has been unreal, and, you know, doing other things. And that's again, through people that I've met through Liv and Maddie and making those connections. And that's again, why you should be the best person you can be, especially on set, because you make those relationships with people and if they like you, they'll bring you on to other things. You know, it's all about that.
Well, and the more you put yourself out there, the more opportunities you have. It's sort of like the work creates work.
Yeah.
You know, and being a good human being makes other people want to work with you.
Please. being a good human being should just be a staple. Like, that should just be a said thing. We've been so lucky because Liv and Maddie is like, oh my God, like the most fun place to be at ever. And it's so funny because you go on another job and you're like, oh, wait. People aren't like that all
people
the time.
People are always nice, so they don't always have
because,
integrity.
You know, we have guest stars that come on Liv and Maddie, and they're always like, oh my God, you guys are such a family. You guys are so much fun, and you forget that other places aren't like that.
It's true. We're very, very spoiled.
Ugh, you know, be that way. But that, again, is because we're all that way, you know? So be a good person.
Be a good person.
Number one, be a good person.
So speaking of the opposite of good people, how do you handle rejection and haters? this is something that everybody's been asking. It's like, how do you handle rejection and haters? Like, this is not just an issue for actors necessarily.
Well,
although when you're in the public eye, there's a crazy thing with the public, with the social media, right?
Oh, social media.
Like, social media, I think this is an issue for, like, all young people in general, but then of course people in the public eye have it sort of on steroids.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. The things people have said about me and the things that people have problems with me physically that are just hysterical to me. Like, the gap in my teeth offends so many people.
It's so offensive.
It's so offensive. And, it's funny because I can always tell the age range of my haters because if they're under 14, they hate my eyebrows. My eyebrows are way too big for them. But if they're over 14, they're on fleek. It's a very one or the other.
I'm done.
They're not like, I'm unsure about your eyebrows. They're freakishly large or they're incredible. That's how that is. But, you know, how do I deal with it? I find it funny now because really I'm so much older than the majority of them that I look at their profiles and they're like 7 years old and they have like, their bio is like live, laugh like God. And there's like a psalm that they put about like not judging other people. And then they're just writing like, go kill yourself.
Judging the most.
Yeah. Just saying horrible things, but it's really just for like just for a reaction. So I feel blessed to be this age dealing with it than being like Dove's age or being younger, like Tenzing's age, and having people say this, because at my 18 years old, my 19 years old, I would have probably been at a different place with it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I mean, you're not going to tell me I'm not good. Like, I care more about if you told me I was a bad actor, which you won't, because I'm not. But if you think I'm ugly, I don't care. Whether or not someone finds me attractive is not, I don't put my worth on that.
So that's something that's come with age. That's a wisdom that you have been able to grow into.
Because you realize that you can't please everybody. Like, regardless if you are, like, the most gorgeous, best actor in the entire world, there's nothing anybody can say about you, which I feel like that's your daughter. Like, you see that and, like, you hear comments and you're like, well, you're obviously wrong. So it's just, I just can't take it. I can't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I can't. I get more mad when I see comments where they're saying hurtful things to each other.
Mm-hmm. That happens on those threads.
Yeah, when they're saying it to me, because it's really them, they're lashing, they're looking for attention. Like, there's someone's not loving them enough wherever they are. And that's the sad thing. It has really nothing to do with me.
Well, and people really reveal themselves by how hateful they can be. It's like, wow, you're just basically broadcasting your internal condition more than anything else, and much more than making actually a comment on me.
It's because they don't think we're real people. You know, we're unattainable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a, it's, and now that it's so, like, I mean, it's just live. For my birthday, I was at Venice Beach with a couple of my girlfriends, and someone had tweeted something about Shelby's outfit on the beach with us, like, right then. Like, and it was like, wait, what?
Who is that?
And where are you? Like, you become very unsafe. I had someone at a movie theater, like, approach me way too closely. And he was, like, yelling at me about, like, what shows I was on because kids had asked for pictures. And it was, I had never felt so vulnerable before in my life. And that's when that hater thing becomes a different thing and it becomes an unsafe thing.
I have noticed this, and I noticed this really early on with Dove. There's something that happens to people when you become a public figure. It's like all of a sudden you're not a real person mm-hmm. anymore, and you just said something to that effect, but it's like you literally turn into an object. You become objectified, And that's a really scary thing, because if somebody's an object, and this happens with racism, this happens with sexism, this happens with other, you know, things like that, you can treat objects like they're not people because they're not people in your mind. And so you can say and do the most horrible, scary things. Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets kind of weird.
It's unfair. You know, you sign up for, you know, working, and you sign up for, you know, like, doing the job and becoming the character. And I understand that that comes with, you know, taking pictures and signing autographs, which is something that I love to do personally. I think it's so much fun. But when it becomes a safety issue, and when it becomes like, that doesn't mean that you get to, you know, invade somebody's personal space. And like, I remember Anne Hathaway said that she was at a party and someone just came up to her and been like, "I hate you." What? And she was like, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you." Like, you shouldn't feel like you could be able to do that.
There's a sense of entitlement. Yeah. Like, I get to just come up and start talking at you, or like, what? Touching you. Well, or taking it's so pictures
weird. I get that range. Anyway. I have had, my whole life, I've had this thing where people, like, strangers talk to me all the time. Like, just all the time in general about anything. And I typically welcome it because it's funny. I've met very interesting people. But, like, now it's just like, ooh, it becomes really scary.
Yeah.
Like, especially all the scary things that are going on in the world now, like, you have to be so wary of it.
It's funny, you know, because a lot of kids who want to be actors, what they're really enticed by isn't necessarily the work so much, but it's the idea of the fame and the things, the idea that they have that goes with that, the trappings. But, you know, the truth is, it's a very double-edged thing. You know, you get to do what you love to do, make a living doing your passion, and there's nothing more beautiful or wonderful than that. But there's a shadow side mm-hmm. to it.
Oh, no, you hit the nail on the head with, I think, the majority of people that come out here are looking for fame. Like, I could care less if anybody knew my name as long as I was working.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, respected by your peers, maybe.
Absolutely. That's important
to most actors.
When you asked about idols, I think one of someone who I should list is, like, Allison Janney. Like, Frances McDormand. Like, those women, I think, are just one of the most incredible actors, character actors, actors in general. And they are the ones that, like, unless you know them for their work and appreciate them for your work, you probably wouldn't know them by name.
No.
You know, and they are widely respected.
They're incredible.
And have so many awards between them. That to me is more enticing. I don't care if I'm in a magazine. I'd rather be revered. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Absolutely, 110%. But a lot of people do come for fame, and that's a very small percentage of people that get that.
It doesn't translate into good acting.
No, and that's also very, very true.
So speaking of fame, let's talk about the Disney Channel for a second, because boop, boop. Disney is probably, I mean, I know you did a lot of work on The Middle before you ever showed up on Disney mm-hmm. with Liv and Maddie, but Disney has a platform like nobody else. They are a global company. Their reach is incredible, and they change lives. When you get on that channel, it's like amazing what can happen to your career. What's been your experience with Disney? Anything you care to say about that? Advice for kids? You know, demystification?
I think that I owe my career to the Disney Channel, honestly. I don't, like, because everything I've worked on has been, like, a platform of Disney. The Middle is ABC, and before that I did Huge, which was ABC Family, before now Freeform. But, like, if it wasn't for those casting directors and those networks that said yes, like the Suzanne Guttersmith and then the G. Charles Wrights, if it wasn't for them, like, I just would not be here. And I don't even think that I would continue to have a career right now. So I owe so much, everything, to the Disney Channel. The fact that they, you know, weren't looking for a Hispanic crazy ball weirdo person like me even for this role, you know. Their platform is ridiculous. It's huge. And I think that they take it so seriously, and they are so specific about the content that they give and the message that they give out. And I think we're lucky. I grew up watching Disney Channel. Lizzie McGuire was my everything. That's So Raven was, you know, I dreamed of being on Disney Channel. So the fact that I am is insane. The fact that I'm a part of Disney history, is my pride and joy right now. Like, insane.
That's so cool. You mentioned casting directors. Want to say anything about casting directors right now?
Oh my God, be nice to them. No, you know, I think that a lot of people, we talked about it earlier, that people put casting directors on a platform. Like, they put them a little higher above them, and that makes, you know, you should go into an audition being on the even level, but also know that this is their business, and you need to be, to be on that level, you have to be prepared and be respectful and be, you know, ready with your material and take your job as seriously as they do, because every single one, there's not been a single casting director I've come across in 10 years that didn't take their job seriously. Mm-hmm. So I think that's so important, and because of them, I have work.
Well, you know? they're so key to, you know, what makes something magic and successful, and they really are kind of unsung heroes.
They really are. There needs to be an Academy Award for casting directors. There just needs to be. Like, you see these movies that you fall in love with, and someone had to decide to put them there. Someone had to put them in the running for that.
Somebody found the chemistry between the leads mm-hmm. that you fell in love with exactly. and were moved by, and, you know, made
they
you
make
feel
careers.
Things. They do. They make careers, and also when you've got these, you know, iconic, amazing movies and TV series, they change people's lives who are watching them, too.
Absolutely.
By the choices of who they put in those roles.
Mm-hmm. And whether or not they decide to put someone of color or, you know, make a part of a female role and things like that. Like, they're the reason that that turnaround is happening. You know, I've seen more this pilot season of the words any ethnicity. We're seeing any ethnicity, which is just wonderful. Because then, you know, then you're deciding who the best person is for the role and not necessarily, like, do they fit that idea that you already had put in place.
Thank you for saying that, because the role modeling thing is so huge. And I've seen you speak to this in other interviews that you've done. But, you know, to be able to see somebody in a role who looks like you.
Ugh, that's so true. And I did not have that. Even when I tell you, like, the women that I admired the most, none of them looked like me. You know, I just didn't have that. And it, in a weird way, it never deterred me, though. Like, I didn't ever think that I couldn't do it, but I know that a lot of people do, and I can see why. You know, I remember being a kid, and I used to take my favorite movies, because I was that generation that at 12 got online, and I would get scripts, and I would write myself parts in movies that already existed. And that's what started my love for writing, because I was like, you know, if you're not going to write somebody look like me, then I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that again goes into be productive. You know, as an actor, I think it's important to be as multifaceted as you can be and find other loves. Like, I can't wait to direct. I can't wait to have my own production company. Like, I want to do everything. And I think that's important as an actor to at least respect what everybody does in a production.
Well, and the more you understand about how to direct or write or produce or any of those things, the better an actor you're going to be.
Oh, 100%.
And, you know, that's yeah. just... That goes without saying. Well, and the beautiful thing about this little piece of our conversation, Jessica, is that, you know, you may not have seen other people out there who looked like you doing the things you wanted to do, but because that didn't deter you, now you can be that for other people.
That's insane. I get letters from girls that say things like that, and that, it just blows my mind. Like, it's crazy.
That makes me cry.
I know.
So
it does me too. Like, it's just... Whew, it's such a crazy place to be, because you think it's like a story that happens to somebody else. You don't think that's something that happens like to you, that you would be that person for somebody. But I mean, I appreciate it, and I don't take it lightly.
It's powerful. It's really important. So if you hadn't done this, if you weren't an actor, what do you think you might be doing right now?
If I wasn't doing anything film related, I would say there were a couple things. When I was little, a child psychologist was something that was really big for me. I really, and that goes with acting, is the fact that I just love the human mind and why we think the way we do, and what, you know, what makes us feel the things that we do, and why do some people feel things differently. I always found that so fascinating, and how it affects the human body, and, you know, I loved that. So being a psychiatrist was something, or a psychologist. And also, I wanted to be an Egyptologist for a long time. Ancient Egypt has always fascinated me. And those were really the big ones. But I always thought that, oh, no, I'll play it on TV. That was always the next thing. Like, I was like, nah, I'll just do that on TV.
I'll just do it on TV and
yeah,
I'll get that.
Acting was just always it for me. Like, even when people were like, you know, like 2% of people do that, I'm like, okay. It's a good percentage. Like, you know, it's such a weird thing. I just had this blind, just, you know, belief in myself, though. Even when at my hardest days, when, like, there was probably no reason outside to believe in myself. I always just did. And I think that had a lot to do with my mom's support for me. You know, she was always like, there's always going to be somebody better at this than you. But it's like, you have to be, there's always going to be somebody prettier, better, like always. That's always the thing. But it's like, what about you makes you different? And what about you makes you you that no one else can have?
Well, and you can't be stopped by that because it's obviously true that there's no matter who you are in the world, there's going to be somebody who's better at it than you do. But what do you do about that? You go, oh, well, then I can't, or I may as well not.
It's a lot of people do. A lot of people do. And like, and that was another thing. My mom would always be like, nobody's better than you and you're not better than anybody else. You know, as just as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important too, because I think as actors, once you start working, sometimes people put themselves above other things. And that's another thing about being a good person and being, you know, it's like, it's a business. You have to always be like ready.
Nobody likes a diva, actually.
No. Or like, you know, and in the same breath, you should still have like, your opinion, like, you don't lose who you are, but just understand that you're on a team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a team sport.
Absolutely.
So, any advice for kids who would like to have this life, who think that this is the life they want to have, like, they want to go out to Los Angeles and be a professional actor?
I encourage them to think about if you would do this for free every day for the rest of your life. If you did it for free, would you do it? I think that's the most important thing, because I think a lot of people, again, think that they're going to make a bajillion dollars and, you know, they're going to be rich and famous. And that's just not what this craft is about. If you don't think of it as a craft, if you think about it as being famous, I want my own reality show, then go do that. Go have a reality show. Go have 15 minutes of whatever that is. But don't call yourself an actor. Call yourself a personality, because I'm done with that. To be an actor, it takes a craft and it takes, you know, work on yourself, whether that's in class or that's personal work or personal growth or whatever method. But it takes way more than just deciding you want your picture taken, for sure. But I would encourage them to learn as much as they can about it and go to school if they can for it.
So educate yourself on business of it.
110%. The business part of it, and just know what you're going to get in, what you're going to get. I just think it's really important that if you don't have a drama club in your school, to start a drama club or start writing plays. I remember I even started a girl group in my chorus teacher's like closet with his instruments. Like, anything you want to do creatively, I encourage you to do that as early as you can. You know, everyone has cell phones now, like, make videos, you know. Now we live in a generation where it's so easy to put things up, you know. Find little things to do that like fit the craft you want to go into. Right now we're in a place where if you want to do animation and stuff like that, they're all available to you. So, and you don't need a lot of money to do it. So I encourage that, but, learn as much as you can and be prepared, for the bumps along the road, because they're going to be.
Oh, and don't be stopped waiting for somebody to pick you or choose you. Like make it happen. Be
100%. If you think you're going to come here and someone's just going to go, I want that girl to be in my movie about that girl. It's just, that's not really how it works. It just doesn't. And that shouldn't be how you want it to work. You know, I think, the success is in the struggle. You know, I think the only way you're ever going to be happy with where you came out is of all the things that, you know, I earned this. I know that now because of what I've been through.
I love that. Jess, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was super fun. Super, super fun.
Thanks for listening to this Hometown to Hollywood podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe and tell your friends so they can listen too. This episode was sponsored by my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, which you can find on Amazon. If you like my podcast, you'll probably also enjoy my blog at hollywoodparentsguide.com, where you can subscribe for free and get new information every week to help with your own journey. See you next time.